This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. Today, our special roundtable live from Detroit. We're at the Detroit Breakfast House and Grill, a look at the real National Football League, what the role black athletes will play, and will we ever see a black owner in the NFL? To talk about these topics and much, much more, two men who know football and the city of Detroit better than most. Lim Barney was named NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year in 1967 and went on to have a stellar career for the Detroit Lions. Barney was elected to the NFL Hall of Fame and after football became a business executive. He joins us via phone. Also with us, Mel Farr, a standout at UCLA. He became the Lions' number one draft choice in 1967. Farr went on to have a standout career with Detroit and later became one of the biggest African-American automobile dealers in the country. Also with a sports writer for the New York Times and regular on this program, Bill Roden. Gentlemen, I thank you all. And Lim, we should note you've been kind enough to join us. You've got a lot of functions going on, and I know you may have to leave us early. If you have to, Lim, we certainly understand it, and just let us know. Lim, let me start with you. The idea of the game you knew coming in 1967 and the game we see today, entirely different in one sense, but a lot the same in another.
Yes, it is, Ed, and great to be on your show. And before I answer that question, Ed, I want to let the people know James Brown just left, but James did his first play-by-play with me at Alcorn State University against Mississippi Valley State for BET. But what a great job he's done since. Well, you're right, Ed, it's a joy to have had the chance to play in the National Football League, to employ and deploy my God-given skills and talents. But the evolution of the game has changed from during the years both Mel and I were there. It's still a 100-yard field by 52 and a third with width. But the game has evolved to a bigger, stronger, faster, more quicker, with some of the athletes being a little more intelligent today. But the game is still the game. It's the game of choice and the largest sports fraternity in the world, and everybody's waiting for Super Bowl Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Mel Farr, what do you see as the biggest change, particularly for the black athlete?
Well, and thanks, Ed, for having me on the show. And I just want to say, when we came here to the Detroit Lions, our coach, Joe Smith, said that Lim Barney and Mel Farr was a pair that a full house couldn't beat. But yeah, the game has changed, absolutely. And I think it's because of the speed of the game. You know, when I played back in 1967, I used to reverse the field. I said, you know what? If I reverse the field, you know, I can outrun all these guys out there because they were a bunch of white linebackers and safeties and et cetera, and they did not have the speed that I had. So if it's one thing that has really changed in the game over the last 30 years, has been the speed of the game, because there are more African-Americans playing defense. When I played there, there was no black African-American middle linebacker in the league. You know, so that today the outside linebackers, you know, they can run as fast as the running back. So you have to have that speed, and the game is so fast today. You know, and the guys are big. You know, and they also are much. I mean, they're trained. They're well trained. We did not lift weights. Mm-hmm. All right, when we played, we were out there just with our just brute strength and playing the game. So today they're really prepared to go out there and play.
Bill Roden, here's a remarkable point. The hue of the game has changed a whole lot since 1967. I mean, Mel alluded to it, but when you looked at the game in 1967, there were a lot of white guys out there. You don't see that today.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's when generally that's been one of the most remarkable things, is just the fact that the league is like 64-67% black. And I'm sure when Cass entered the league in the early 60s, they figured that would never happen. But that also leads to, I think, what is the next evolution, because of everything that, and by the way, Lim Barney is the greatest cornerback of all time. And when I walked in, Mel introduced me to Miller Farr, his brother. I said, Miller Farr, man, is one of the greatest cats of all time. I was like 16. I saw Miller Farr intercept a quick out. And I said, I got to play defensive back. but I think that because of everything Mel and Lim said, I think that's where we get the next evolution, is at quarterback, where brothers now are transforming the game. And although the system is kind of resisting it, you know, because what happened to every position got bigger, blacker, faster, stronger, except quarterback, because that was sort of the American ideal of Mr. Manhood and John Wayne and all that.
And you had to be smart, let them tell it.
Well, yeah, it's one of those people like middle linebacker, guard, quarterback. But if you
center.
Look at, yeah, center.
Yeah,
center. But if you look at what's happening now, though, with Vince Young and that position, the quarterback position now is going to be the last frontier of transformation.
Lim Barney, let me ask you this, and Mel, pick up after this the point that Lim will make here, and that's the idea, Lim, of the sense of this kind of old boys network that is also the NFL. Do you see that changing?
Yes, I do see that changing in great facets, particularly with the coaching scenario, the front office administration. But again, going back to the offset of the evolution, Mel made mention of it, but the whole middle perspective of the football, offense and defense, was void when we came in, except for Willie Woods at free safety. Middle linebacker evolved into the first African-American and Willie Lanier, then the center from the gentleman from down at the Miami Dolphins, and then the quarterback, first quarterback. I mean, Sandy Stevens was plugged, but the first active African-American quarterback to play was Marlon Briscoe. But the game has evolved around. Mel hit a point about big guys during our years in the middle and late 70s and 60s was if it was a big guy on any team at 300 pounds, he was sort of like an oaf. He just blocked up the middle and clogged up the middle. Today, every team has 5 and 6 to 7 300-pounders that can run down 4-4-40 running backs. So the game has made a tremendous evolution, Ed.
Mel, let me ask you this. The persona, particularly of the black athlete, I grew up in Detroit. You know, when you guys came in the league, I was 7 years old, and I idolized you all. And you and Lim were two of the coolest cats to come into the city. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But we also see the persona of the black athlete where that had been resisted for a long, long time, that you should toe the line, that you should be more corporate, that you should homogenize yourself more. Talk to me about how you dealt with that and also what you see today in a Terrell Owens or others who many look at and say that that's the bastardization of what we've seen of the cool black athlete.
Well, you know what? I have to say, and I want to go back to my original point I made, when you say the change in down the middle, you know. But if you look at, you mentioned my brother, you know, he was all pro defensive back. He was a quarterback in high school, all right? You look at Mel Farr, you know, Mel Farr was a quarterback in high school. You look at Lim Barney was a quarterback in high school, you know. So, but we all played the other positions because of the fact that it was not available for us to play back then. Now, you look at where the black athlete is today, they've got more opportunities, you know. I could not dream and aspire to be a coach in the National Football League when I retired, you know. There were no blacks coaching the football then, you know. So I couldn't not be a head coach. I couldn't be a general manager, you know. So that was not available for us then. Now the next step is that, you know, we've got some great black athletes out there. They're very intelligent, you know. Now the next step, you know, we need to go look at ownership. You know, ownership is the next step for us, I think, as black athletes, not to want to play, but want to own.
Lim, you and Mel are the personification of the athlete who, in fact, went from the gridiron to become successful in business. I want to get you to talk about that briefly, but I also want you to address the question of what we've seen of the black athlete today, the way the media portrays him, i.e. Terrell Owens and others, and whether or not they get a fair shake or whether they need to look in the mirror.
I think the athlete today need to look in the mirror because, as Mel mentioned earlier, during our years, we had chances. Today, they have opportunities. The money, the mega dollars that they're getting, and you look at a guy like Terrell Owens, who seems to have, over the years, made a mockery of the game. Rather than being gracious and thankful for the God-given skills and talents and attributes that he received, he made mockery of the game. A Keyshawn Johnson, a Randy Moss. These guys, I mean, you couldn't make that kind of money selling dope if it was legal. And they seem to make a mockery of the game. But the case in point with both Mel and I and the gentleman of yesteryear as compared to the gentleman today, we got involved in the community, Ed, as you know. The community always was based. It was where education and training was exposed and to try and give back to the next generation that's coming so it'll be a much better society in years to come is something that's always been at our heart.
Yeah, let me just say this, just as a journalist and writer who's kind of observed this progression, I think that I think you've got a difficult time because, again, I think that early on, you know, black athletes came in and they were being grateful and that kind of stuff. Now, you know, as you know, the more money you get, sometimes the less grateful you become, and you kind of thinking you're demanding stuff. I think the challenge now, and Mel, you really hit it when you said it's ownership. You've got a league now that's 67% brothers. Now, the question is, this is a lot of power. There's a lot of potential power. And I think that the challenge for these guys, we just had a coaching thing where you had 10 openings. 10 openings. And not one black coach was hired. And you've got a lot of young brothers who are really sharp coaches, really qualified. So to me, I think you really have to look at that because what that means is, wait a minute, you got a league that's 67%, but you guys don't control anything. You got no power. And I think that has to be the quest of this particular time. How do you transform that into power?
Lim, I want to ask you and Mel the same question. Lim, I'll start with you. The idea, and we heard in the first segment, James Brown attacked that, and Bill brings it up. Were you shocked, surprised at all that with the number of openings we saw in head coaching ranks that we did not see one black hire, particularly after a year or two ago the NFL saying that they wanted to make sure that minorities were given a fair look and shot?
Was I shocked, Ed? Most assuredly. Again, it's something that's always been on my heart. I've never had an inkling to coach, but I've always been coachable. And as Bill just alluded to, there are a lot of young, sharp African-American coaches who've been coordinators, both offensive and defensive, but have never given a shot. You look at the Detroit Lions again. They went out and got another coach this year. I have nothing against Rod Marinelli. I trust and pray that he'll do great with the Lions, but no interviews last year for African Americans, no interviews this year for potential African American coaches. And it's a travesty as to the reason not only the Detroit Lions, but the whole NFL does not look at that picture. Because when you look at it, Bill made the assertion, 64% African Americans. They need some people to be able to be over them as head coaches. I think the response will be much better as far as the output of ball players' performance.
Mel, what about a former player like yourself who still has contact, connection, affiliation, and a love for the NFL? How do you deal with what you see in terms of the progress, but also what Lim talks about and the idea of the stagnation that's still there? Are you a force to talk to Tagliabue and the others to say, look, fellas, you know, the trappings are good, but we need to really make inroads here?
Well, you know, Ed, I want to say that I've transformed it from being a football player, right, into being a businessman.
And a very successful one.
So what I am looking, and I want to say that, you know, there are no black owners in the National Football League. So my quest is ownership. If we can change the ownership, then we can change the complexion of the coaches and et cetera, you know. So I think that the National Football League, you know, should look at having black ownership, so I—that's where my head is. I'm going to stay on the point of let's get some black ownership there in the National Football League.
And again, I think that you have to hit that point because ownership is critical. But you know, I want to just hit this one last thing about the coaches again. You know, I debate Gene Upshaw about this all the time. I said, you know, Gene, you know, you're the head of a union that's like, you know, with 67% brothers. And he always, well, yeah, but 30-something percent are white. I said, yeah, I understand that. But I think it's also your responsibility in terms of getting game. You got to change the thinking of this membership.
Hey, Lim, how much power do you believe the players could concentrate and really move if they galvanized and said to the league, look, we're the reason that you're making this money. We want to see some black ownership. Could they do that, and should we expect that ever to happen?
Absolutely, and it only just takes a few people with the know-how to put those things together. I was with Magic last night down at the Charles Wright African American Museum. There are a lot of African American ball players in all of the sports that has just buku dollars, as they said back in the 60s. And what they need to do is pool that money together. The ownership would be something that could be realized. The league would have to look at it, as Mel has mentioned. Ownership is something that we have not been able to thrust upon as of yet, But, I mean, it's just right around the corner. All they have to do is want to, because the opportunities are here now. It's not a chance like in yesteryear. We're in a whole new millennium. The opportunities are certainly there. I'm going to say goodbye to all you brothers, and Ed, it's always great to talk
hey,
to
Lynn
you.
Hey, Lynn Barney, I you know I greatly appreciate it, buddy.
I love you too, man, and peace be with all of you brothers.
Guys, I only have a minute left, and with that, I want to do something as we close. Bill Roden, I want to thank you. And, Mel, you know I know this. Many people don't. We're going to play a little something. As if Mel Farr being a football great and a business giant wasn't enough, he and Lynn Barney made some music history for you folks that don't know. Take a listen to the beginning of this classic Marvin Gaye song, and if you want to know who this is, it's my friend Mel Farr and Lynn Barney. Bill Roden, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Our thanks to Lynn Barney and Mel Farr, as always. Thank you, my friend. Take a listen, folks. Here we go.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a groovy party, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've